First case on our calendar is the Payphone Association versus the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. Mr. Downey.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Philip Downey. I'm with the law firm of Vorey, Sater, Seymour, and Pease. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Cross Appellee, the Payphone Association of Ohio. I'm going to endeavor to reserve approximately 7 minutes for my rebuttal, and I'll keep my time and attempt to do that. We appreciate the court's time this morning. This is an important case for the Payphone Association of Ohio, which is an association of independent payphone owners. It's an important case for the citizens of Ohio, and in particular to their access to payphones throughout the state. The case before this court has its genesis in a proceeding before the Public Utilities Commission, which was preceded by an enactment of a federal law in 1996, the Telecommunications Act. Important for our purposes here, Section 276 of the Act recognized the importance of promoting the widespread deployment of payphones throughout the United States and the availability of payphone service, the promotion of competition in the payphone industry, and the importance of making sure that discrimination does not occur by the local exchange companies against independent payphone providers. Previously Ameritech Ohio and currently SBC Ohio, one of the largest, if not the largest, payphone owner, also thereby a competitor of our clients, members of the Payphone Association. Our clients are dependent upon SBC Ohio and the other local exchange companies for service, and we are required to pay rates for that service. What the federal government, the Congress, in enacting Section 476 and then the FCC in implementing those directives, mandated the state commissions, including here the Public Utilities Commission, conduct an investigation into whether the payphone rates charged by SBC Ohio complied with federal law, and in particular a test that's referred to in the papers as the new services test. And that test provides, I'm sorry, can Your Honor hear me okay? I apologize if I was a little light there on the voice. The new services test, importantly, is a test to make sure that rates for payphone service are cost-based, that they are forward-looking costs, that they are non-discriminatory, and to the extent the rate includes some component of overhead, that component is fair and reasonable. In this proceeding, which started in 1996, the commission ultimately held a hearing in early 2004, heard testimony, and based upon that evidence and that testimony, determined that SBC Ohio's existing rates did not comply with the new services test, and it established rates first on a going forward basis and then on a retroactive basis to January 2003, when the commission had established interim rates. The Payphone Association of Ohio does not have any dispute with the rates set by the commission. We believe that ultimately, when the commission heard all the evidence, it made the determination on appropriate rates, and those rates are appropriately applied going forward and to the time period during the interim. What we do have issue with is the two questions that remain. The first is the application of rates to comply with the new services test back to April 15th of 1997, which is when the federal law mandated that SBC Ohio have rates that complied. And at the time, it was Ameritech Ohio, and I may refer to SBC Ohio throughout, but it has changed over time. But for simplicity's sake, I'll refer to SBC Ohio. The law required that SBC Ohio file compliant tariffs and demonstrate that its tariffs met the new services test. The commission in this proceeding issued an order in December of 1996. It's in the appendix, and at page 112 of the appendix, the commission ordered that all incumbent local exchange carriers in the state of Ohio are required to file with the commission under this docket by January 15th, 1997, revised tariffs as described in finding 4 of this entry. And with respect to SBC Ohio, that never happened. No tariffs were ever filed before January 15th by SBC Ohio. The filing of tariffs and the compliance with the new services test was not something that was optional either for SBC Ohio or in terms of implementation by the Public Utilities Commission. These were issues that were mandated by federal law, and the fact of the matter is SBC Ohio never demonstrated and filed a compliant tariff, and the PUCO never determined that SBC Ohio's rates were compliant.
Where does that lead you then?
That leads me to a couple of conclusions, Your Honor. The first is with respect to the principal argument on behalf of the cross-appellees that the KECO case and the cases that talk about the subject of retroactive rate making would apply here and prevent this court and the commission from fixing the problem. I would say the absence of tariffs that were filed and found to be compliant with the new services test takes this case outside of those cases that KECO and the other cases discuss.
Because
the premise under which KECO and the other cases are based is that there was, in fact, a tariff submitted to the commission for its approval, and that the commission actually did its job to comply with federal law and approve that tariff and its compliance with the new services test. In the absence of having a properly approved tariff, you don't even get to the question of are we retroactively making rates, because you don't have the premise to start with. You don't have an approved tariff to base your determination on that we'd be changing that tariff or we'd be doing something different if we applied what the law required retroactively. And I would suggest to the court, it's not really retroactively, it's just applying the law the way Congress demanded it be applied and from the time period that Congress demanded it be applied. So that would be one place that would lead me, Your Honor. The other place would be in the remedy that would be appropriate. And in this case, the remedy that's appropriate is mandating that the Public Utilities Commission require SBC to have rates back to the time period that the law says they were required to meet the new services test, in other words, back to April of 1997, and to issue the appropriate reimbursements or credits in order to carry out that federal mandate.
What would be the practical result of you prevailing on that argument?
A number of things, but the primary thing would be SBC Ohio would be required to take action to pay reimbursements, to pay credits to those who have been paying rates that were far in excess of what the law allowed for approximately 6 year time period. The commission never got to the issue of the mechanics of doing it because the commission just said we're not going to deal with that issue and we're not going to worry about the fact that they were non-compliant, you know. And so I would say we go back to the commission, and then the commission would determine all of the particulars of the mechanisms to accomplish what we think federal law should
require. Recipients would be of that refund would be whom?
They would be any payphone owner who was charged a rate that was in excess of what the law allowed during the time period that they were charged that rate.
Was there any estimation of the amount? Is there any estimate of the amount that is involved in that particular point?
The record is not fully developed, Your Honor, to the point that that could be calculated with certainty. The difference between the rates that existed before and the rates that the commission determined to be compliant is set forth in the record, and they vary from one region to another by magnitudes of one times or two times the size of the rate. Once you factor in the different components of the rate. When I take a break, Your Honor, I will take a look at those numbers specifically, but to answer your question directly, there wasn't a calculated number to say this is the universe of the total reimbursement or refund that would be due. We never got to that point in the hearing because we couldn't get the commission to actually hear it.
I think a fair characterization is that your opposing counsel suggests this might be retroactive rate making, which the commission doesn't engage in. What response would you have to that position?
Primarily that the premise of the rule against retroactive rate making is that there was a rate that was actually filed, actually reviewed, and actually lawfully approved. We're not talking about a rate that went through that process and then was later determined by this court or by a subsequent commission order in the same proceeding or another proceeding to be unlawful. Here we're talking about a rate that was never actually filed, let alone reviewed and approved for purposes of determining its compliance with the new services test, and that's the key.
But you want a refund.
Only because we have been charged the unlawful and in our view, improperly collected rates going back to 1997.
Which is the predicate of the problem I have. If the rate hasn't been approved, how do you know how much refund you're supposed to get?
Well, the rates were actually collected. We actually paid them during that time period when we shouldn't have been.
But there was an authorization for that rate, correct? In the predecessor of SBC was already under an approved rate, although you're arguing that it did not do the technical filing for the new services plan. Is that your point?
In a way, yes, Your Honor. The it is true that the Ameritech or SBC Ohio's predecessor in the mid-1980s had filed rates for payphone service or filed tariffs for payphone service rates. That much is true. But in 1996, the law required that those rates be reviewed and approved and determined to comply with the new services test if they were going to be lawful. And that's what never happened. And I would suggest to the court that it's not a mere technicality. We're talking about a federal law and a federal mandate that is a part and parcel of the objectives that Congress was trying to accomplish through Section 276, which is to prevent discrimination, to make sure that local exchange companies charge reasonable and just rates, and to promote competition.
Didn't the FCC, though, have an exemption built in for existing companies such as the SBC Group? I mean, was it that every single company was required to file the new tariff, or was there not an exception built in within the federal statute?
I would dispute any suggestion that there was any exception to the new services test, certainly. You know, and with respect to what was required to be filed, the Public Utilities Commission made quite clear in the entry I quoted from December 1996 when it started this case. It didn't accept SBC Ohio or any other ILEC or CLEC from it the requirement that they file tariffs so that they could be reviewed. And many did, and SBC Ohio did not. And so we never actually got to the point of having tariffs that were submitted for approval and for evaluation under the new services test. And the last
Council,
point.
Council, are you stating then that SBC totally ignored that requirement? They were silent as to the tariff filings?
That's true. That's true, and you could read that from the record. The requirement from the Commission's order of December 1996 was not met with any tariff filing by SBC by January 15th.
Was
That's
there any indication
the
by SBC or its predecessor that they will stand with the filings that they had made previously, and those will be, rather than being redundant, that's their tariff rate pursuant to the 1996 federal provisions?
Those arguments have been made later in this proceeding. Those arguments have been made that, our existing tariffs from 1985 complied with the law that went into effect in 1996.
Is there any indication that they would have changed their tariffs or that there was some sort of modification that would have been appropriate in response to the 1996 legislation?
Yes. Yes. The first thing is the Commission's ultimate determination that they didn't comply with the new services test and setting rates that did comply. And the second is in 1999, in January, during this proceeding, the Commission paused to make the observation, and this is in its order dated in January 99, that the Commission finds there is insufficient evidence at this time to satisfy the Commission that the payphone tariffs of Ameritech Ohio and others fully comply with the requirements of Section 276. So what we have here clearly is a recognition by the Commission that rates are being charged that haven't been demonstrated to be compliant with the new services test, and that's what the law provides.
If the tariffs haven't been approved, how do you calculate the amount of the refund you seek?
Based upon the amounts that were actually collected and paid.
What percentage of what was actually collected and paid do you think that you're entitled to as a refund?
The difference between what was collected and paid and the amounts determined by the Commission ultimately to be compliant with the new services test, because that's the rate that the payphone owners should have been paying from April 1997.
What is that rate?
I'm sorry, what is the specific rate in terms of dollars? I'd have to look that up, Your Honor, and I will do that during my 1 minute when I come back for rebuttal, and I will mention that. Unless there are any other questions, I'll reserve my remaining minute, if that's my time, for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Downey. Mr. Adams.
May it please the court, my name is Bill Adams with the law firm of Bailey Cavalieri Counsel for SBC Ohio in this matter. The Payphone Association argues that SBC Ohio never had an approved tariff in this case, and that is just plain wrong. First, you have to look back at the Federal Commission's November 1996 order on reconsideration that said, first, that telephone companies had to file payphone line tariffs with the State Commission, and second, that if telephone companies already had those tariffs filed, that that could satisfy the federal requirement. So that's the first order that came out. Then the Ohio Commission issued the December order, which Counsel for Payphone Association referenced. And in that order, they specifically referred to SBC's pre-existing tariffs. In April 15th, 1997.
Did the order make it clear that if SBC wanted to rest on the existing tariffs, no filing was required, or did the order require them to file?
The order, the history of the case made that point clear later, because the Ohio Commission in May of 1997 issued another entry that said all telephone companies in the state had filed the requisite tariffs and they were approved effective as of April 15th, which was the Federal Commission's deadline. And the Federal Commission before that, on April 15th, approved SBC's plan for Ohio and made the specific findings that SBC had the requisite state tariffs in place.
So in reality, the payphone folks' argument is correct. The order directed everyone to file. SBC didn't file, but later on in the proceeding, the PUCO said, entered something on the record that indicated they were going to treat it as deemed filed, glossed over it.
They had previously filed the rates in a different case, and that wasn't true of most of the telephone companies in the state. But SBC Ohio had pre-existing tariffs that had been approved by the commission before 96-13-10 ever began. And the commission looked at those rates inside of 96-13-10 and approved them in this particular case. And if you look at the September 1997 order, that makes that abundantly clear, because it says that SBC Ohio's rates, among others, are compliant with the federal cost requirements of the new services test.
And when they made a final determination, did they not, in this case, as to rates?
They made a final determination in September.
Was that determination, did that allow SBC to charge the same rate that they had been charging?
Yes. There was no change in the rate from pre-existing rates all the way up until 2004.
So just so I understand, it's your position that SBC was never covered by this new service plan requirement?
No, it was. And those rates were reviewed. The pre-existing tariffed rates were reviewed in the case that is before this court now, and those rates were deemed to satisfy the new services test. That's the September 1997 entry from the PUCO.
But you would agree then that on December 19th of 1996, the document that your opponent is referring to, there was nothing in there that talked specifically exempting SBC from filing a tariff that would be compliant with a new services test?
That is the Ohio Commission entry that doesn't do that, but there is a paragraph in there that says, specifically refers to SBC's previously approved tariffs and authorizes other telephone companies in the state to mirror the SBC tariffs in their approval process. So the commission did acknowledge in that entry that SBC already had approved tariffs, and then in a later entry said that the SBC tariffs satisfied the federal cost requirements.
Okay.
Mr. Downey takes a position, I think, that SBC Ohio had committed to voluntarily provide refunds to some of the payphone providers, and then and then reneged on that commitment.
Yes, I would like to address that. What Mr. Downey refers to in brief is the Federal Commission limited waiver that came out on April 15, 1997. Some telephone companies in the country had not yet have their state tariff approvals, unlike SBC Ohio that already had that. But for those other telephone companies, the Federal Commission gave them an extension to May 19, 1997 to come into compliance, provided that whatever rates went into effect would be retroactive back to April 15th. So the waiver he's talking about is for less than a 40-day period, and they mistakenly argue before this court that it was indefinite and lasted forever, and they also mistakenly argue that it was applicable to SBC Ohio because it already had commission-approved tariffs in place in Ohio, as a Federal Commission found on another entry on April 15, 1997, and as the Ohio Commission found in its May 97 entry and its September 1997 entry. But their argument, in that argument, they rely on three letters which are not part of the record in this case. Two of them were proffered at hearing and not admitted, and the third was never proffered or admitted. And the Payphone Association does not argue that the Commission erred in refusing to admit the two letters that were proffered. They are making substantive arguments before this court based on those letters, and that those arguments are waived under Supreme Court precedent. But as to our cross appeal, the Commission didn't do everything right. There really is two separate cases in this case. One is all these events that we talked about back in 1997, where SBC had the original rates approved. And then there's a second case that comes up after January 2002 as a result of the Federal Commission decision in what's called the Wisconsin Order. The Federal Commission changed how it handled payphone filings in the Wisconsin Order January 2002. And what it said, it revised how this new services test worked. And it added local usage service as part of the services that had to come before the state commissions for approval. So this all resulted in SBC having to file new rates and new cost studies before the commission. And those are what the hearing was on in 2004. And that is what came before the commission. And they granted, or they addressed those rates in the September 2004 opinion and order. And SBC submits that that is where they erred in this case because, and it's important for this court to understand, the commission is not acting in the way it normally does in this case in setting rates. In 47 U.S.C. 276, the Congress preempted state regulation of payphone services across the board. The Ohio Commission would have no jurisdiction over payphone services except for the delegation from the Federal Commission that happened in that November 1996 reconsideration order. And what the Federal Commission is delegated to the State Commission, the review of those particular rates under the criteria that the Federal Commission established. And in the Wisconsin order, the Federal Commission established three different ways for calculating overhead for these services. SBC performed one of these methods called the physical colocation tariff order method, and the commission doesn't really dispute that in its opinion and order or on brief. What it says is we don't like the result of that. We think the overhead is too high, and we're going to reject that because the overhead is too high. And in doing that, the commission relied on 47 U.S.C. 276. It was reinterpreting the federal statute that Congress gave the Federal Commission the exclusive jurisdiction to interpret, and they did so in the Wisconsin order. They approved the methodology that SBC Ohio used, and the commission should be reversed in this regard because it has plainly exceeded the scope of its jurisdiction in this case. And with that, I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Mr. Lindgren.
May it please the court, My name is Thomas Lindgren. I'm with the Office of Attorney General Jim Petro, and I am here representing the Public Utilities Commission. I would first like to address the arguments raised by the Payphone Association. As Mr. Downey noted, the association is satisfied with the current rates, but would like them to be retroactive to 1997. This sort of retroactive relief is not available under Ohio law. This principle dates back to the court's Kiko case decided nearly 50 years ago. In that case, the court recognized the utility's obligation to charge only rates set by the commission until those rates were lawfully changed.
Counsel, could you maybe address initially why PUCO accepted the 1985 tariff information from SBC, or then Ameritech, in lieu of a filing post 1996?
Your Honor, I believe that SBC had two different tariffs for different services on file. One was filed in 1985 and one in 1996. The Federal Commission, in their second reconsideration order, noted that if a local phone company had a tariff on file that complied with the new services test, then it did not need to refile those tariffs.
And there was no magic or defined date that said that even if it was filed pre-96, that it had to be refiled post-96?
No, Your Honor, there was no requirement that it be filed at a certain time, only that it comply with federal law. And in the September 1997 order, the Ohio Commission specifically found that SBC's rates complied fully with federal law, both with Section 276 of the Telecommunications Act and with all of the FCC's orders.
So then the orders that came from the FCC would more appropriately be read, in the event that there is no tariff filing on record, they must file by this date or pursuant to 276. Would that be the way the PCO looked at this filing requirement?
Well, Your Honor, the commission determined that SBC did have rates on file that complied. They had been filed under a different docket number, but that didn't make them invalid. Those were the valid rates, and the commission specifically ordered that those rates remain in place.
Would it be fair to say that, as the Payphone Association argues, that the commission ignored its own order of 96 when it told everybody to file?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that's a fair characterization.
Is that an unfair characterization of its 96 order?
Your Honor, that order specifically noted that Ameritech did have rates on file that the commission had already approved.
Did that order specifically exempt Ameritech from filing?
Not expressly, Your Honor, but it did note that Ameritech already had rates on file, and later in this proceeding, the commission determined that those rates that had been in effect all along did comply with federal law. So under this court's precedent, retroactive relief would not be available. 40 years after the Kiko case, in the Lucas County case, this court reviewed Ohio's rate-making statutes and found no provision that would permit retroactive relief. Just last year, in the Green Cove decision, this court reaffirmed its adherence to the Kiko doctrine. I would submit that the Kiko doctrine has served the state well. It promotes certainty for both customers and utilities, and the court should not overrule that case or create an exception.
Mr. Lundgren, let me ask you the same question I posed to your co-counsel. If I understand Mr. Downey correctly, his suggestion is that SBC Ohio had agreed to provide refunds to the payphone providers where the tariffs that had been in effect were subsequently going to be reduced under the new services test. And what happened to that commitment that was made to the PUCO?
Your Honor, I would reject the premise that there was any commitment made by SBC to pay refunds in the event its rates were ever reduced in Ohio. There were certain letters sent to the SBC, and one to the Ohio Commission staff. However, those letters are not part of the record in this case. They were excluded, and one was never even proffered as evidence. The Commission therefore properly declined to consider them as the basis for finding an agreement, and the Court should do so likewise. Even if the Court does decide to look at the letters, it will see that they only apply in certain circumstances that have no application in Ohio.
All right.
SBC had payphone rates on file with the Commission, and the Commission determined that those rates complied with the existing legal standards. Those were the only rates that SBC could lawfully charge until the Commission had established new rates. The Commission could not have ordered SBC to refund payments it had lawfully collected. Besides seeking a refund from SBC, the Payphone Association also asked the Court to order the Commission to set new rates based on the new services test for all other local telephone companies in the state. There is no legal basis for such relief. The Commission initiated this proceeding to implement Section 276 of the Telecommunications Act. Both the Federal Commission and a Federal Circuit Court have determined that the relevant portions of Section 276 only apply to the Bell operating companies. SBC is the only Bell operating company in Ohio. Therefore, the Commission has no legal duty to apply that test to other carriers in the state. And in its discretion, it has determined that using that test is not required at this time. I would now like to turn to the arguments made by SBC. SBC finds fault with the overhead factors adopted by the Commission. SBC had proposed higher factors, but then failed to meet its burden of showing these factors were reasonable. The Commission therefore set the overhead factors using another methodology that had been specifically approved by the Federal Commission.
I don't know if preemption's the right word, but it seemed that the argument of SBC is that the Commission had no jurisdiction to fiddle around with this at all.
Well, Your Honor, SBC's argument seems to be that once they propose a test, the Ohio Commission has to use whatever test they propose. While, in fact, the FCC had authorized three different methodologies and granted the discretion to select one of those methodologies to the state commissions, not to the local phone companies.
So, but the fundamental legal argument is a dispute over whether or not the Commission had any authority at all.
Yes, Your Honor, but the Federal Commission did specifically authorize a state commission to use any one of these three tests that it found to be reasonable.
And the Commission rejected the methodology used by the SBC and chose one of the other acceptable methodologies.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And what would be the nomenclature to define the methodology that was selected by the PUCO?
The Ohio Commission used the methodology that's sometimes called the TELRIC methodology or sometimes the UNE methodology. And that methodology had been used in Ohio in previous cases to set other telephone rates. So it was something that had been tested. It was known to the Commission, and the Commission believed it to be a reliable method for determining SBC's costs.
So, Counsel, the threshold then is for the Commission to look at the reasonableness of the proposed methodology utilized by the utility, SBC here, find it to be unreasonable, and then move on to a more reasonable methodology.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the way I, and correct me if I'm wrong, of the three methodologies that potentially could be used, they're not, they can't all be reasonable, is that true? Given the SBC's figures or the way that they computed these costs?
Well, they're all potentially reasonable. The Ohio Commission found that SBC's use of the methodology in this case was not reasonable. Their methodology required them to identify several comparable services so the commission could judge the reasonableness of the payphone overhead rate. Well, they could come up with only one comparable service, so it was difficult to gauge the reasonableness of their payphone overhead based on that.
So based on the evidence they presented to support their methodology, it fell short of in the PUCO's eyes, and therefore it was declared unreasonable, and federal authority allows then for PUCO to select a reasonable methodology.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
The commission properly used the authority granted by the federal commission to set reasonable payphone rates using a methodology approved by the federal commission. Finally, the commission's opinion in order and entry on rehearing state the basis for the commission's decision. These entries fully satisfy the requirements of revised code 4903.09 as that statute has been construed by this court. The commission order is consistent with both state and federal law. Neither the Payphone Association nor SBC has shown a basis for reversal. Therefore, the order should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lindgren. Mr. Downey, you've saved just about a minute of your time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, let me answer the question about what the rates were and specifically the difference between the previous rates and the existing rates under the commission's finding. The previous rates had ranged from $15.95 in certain areas to $20.45 in other areas. The $15.95 rate was determined by the commission to be unreasonable by about three times too much, and it was reduced to $6.46, and the others were reduced to $11.61 and $13.40, respectively. Let me just say very briefly, what you sense from the SBC Ohio from the commission is that they're saying a lot of things now about what might have happened previously. They did or didn't file previous tariffs. They did or didn't get exempted from the requirement. All I can do is urge the court to read the entries that were actually issued, read what they say, and read what they did say. And finally, I would point out that not only is a refund not precluded by KECO, it is mandated by federal law in compliance with the new services test.
Counsel, before you sit down, it has been mentioned several times that there's some evidence, some documentation, some letters that you are relying on to show an agreement that were, in fact, not admitted into evidence. What's your response to that, and why should we take a look at those documents?
Not admitting them into the evidence at the hearing is not the same thing as them not being in the record. And they are certainly in the record for purposes of this court's review of what the commission did. We believe they should have been considered by the commission, and that the commission should have acted upon them. They set forth the agreement crystal clearly of Ameritech to provide these refunds consistent
but
with
do those refunds apply to Ohio, or are those for other jurisdictions that didn't have their tariffs set?
They apply to Ohio, not only because that's what the letters clearly say, but there was a letter written by SBC Ohio, then Ameritech, to the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, acknowledging its obligations and that they applied to what goes on in Ohio.
And not just for the 40 days that were at issue here, but continuously?
Until there are rates determined and put into effect to comply with the new services test, that's correct. And that didn't happen until January 2003, after the rates were determined in September of 2004 and then trued up back to January 2003. Until that moment, we'd yet to have rates go into effect that complied with the new services test. And there's no 45-day limit in any of the letters we're looking at here. They were nor could there be, because there still hadn't been compliance with federal law and the new services test, as the Public Utilities Commission said in 1999, when they observed that we still didn't have evidence that they complied.
How are they a part of the record if they were not admitted into evidence?
They
don't become part of the record because they're attached to a brief, do they?
I believe they would be, Your Honor. I believe, you know, earlier in the proceeding.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. That's a new argument. What, you attach something to the brief and it becomes part of the record of the agency or the order that we're reviewing?
Oh, I'm sorry. We talk about briefs in this court?
No. Well, the three, wherever they are. I mean, We've got three letters, and the argument is they were not admitted into evidence. They're not a part of the record, that we should not consider them. And you said they're a part of the record. Tell me how they became a part of the record.
Well, I believe that when we proffer them first as in support of a motion that we filed to expand the scope of the hearing, which happened, I believe, in the summer of 2002 or maybe late 2002. Second, when we attached them to the testimony that we pre-filed, which is what the commission struck. And then third, when we got to the hearing and tried to proffer that evidence for the record.
Were only two proffered or were all three proffered? I thought only two were proffered.
Only two were. The two letters to the FCC in mid-April of 1997. We didn't have access to the letter that came, that was sent to the Public Utilities Commission in May of 97. That was attached to our application for rehearing. But I would say the commission ought not be permitted to deny us an opportunity to make our record. And we certainly presented those letters more than once, at least the first two certainly more than once, to the commission. And the fact that they didn't admit them as evidentiary material doesn't prevent them from being part of the record for purposes of this court's consideration.
And your complaint is, and you're asking us to review their failure to consider and enforce those agreements.
That's correct, and we believe that's required not only by the express terms of the agreement
and your appeal here, you believe, has perfected that issue.
Absolutely. We think that issue is certainly properly before this court, and we've been arguing since day one that the SBC Ohio needs to comply. They haven't complied. The commission needs to order the relief that's appropriate to do that. And with respect to this agreement, it's memorialized in the very FCC order from April of 97 that SBC Ohio otherwise wants to rely on, and that's at page A488 of our appendix, setting forth the FCC's directive on the ordering of refunds, which gives rise to our preemption.
Thank you, Mr. Downey.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Adams, you've saved a little more than 5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to address on our cross appeal what the Federal Commission has done. They did approve three different methodologies as being reasonable, and SBC had its choice of which one it wanted to implement. And I would point out page 11 of the Commission's May 24th brief that says the Commission did not disapprove of SBC's choice of methodologies. So there's really no criticism about the methodology. The criticism is that the outcome is one that they didn't like, but it was beyond the scope of their authority to reject the outcome because the Federal Commission had already approved the methodology and deemed the outcome reasonable.
So your argument is methodology is your choice, and the Commission can't do anything about that?
If you look at paragraph 52 of the Wisconsin order, it says that any three of the options are available to satisfy the new service test pursuant to the Wisconsin order. Yes.
Counsel, what about the statement made by the PUCO's counsel that, yes, all methods are reasonable. You were asked to support the reasonableness of the method chosen because of the suspect outcome there, and SBC failed to meet the standard of, I guess, proof would be or offer evidence that would have satisfied the PUCO as to the reasonableness of the application of that methodology to this particular set of circumstances.
I think there's no criticism in the record or briefs about how SBC applied the particular methodology. And indeed, that section, the sentence I just read out of the Commission's second brief in this case, makes that point very clear. SBC properly applied the methodology. The Commission thought that the outcome of the test produced an overhead that was too large. But that part was beyond the scope of its authority because the Federal Commission, in approving the method SBC used, had already deemed it to be reasonable.
Not as applied to SBC. They just said the methodology was reasonable, and you were asked then to support the reasonableness with evidence before the commission and fell short.
No, I believe we did do that. The commission just didn't like the outcome, and so they chose a different methodology. What the FCC said is any of the three methodologies produces reasonable results. SBC
conclusively,
followed
that you choose a methodology and the states commissions cannot second-guess SBC in setting the rates.
They can second-guess the way they apply the methodology. They look
the way they do the math, but they can't. They cannot question the reasonableness to the circumstances.
Right. The reasonableness we submit is determined by the Federal Commission pursuant to the delegation of authority from Congress under the statute.
Does it make any sense to even have the PUCO have the ability to look at the methodology? I mean, what you're saying is if the PUCO has no option to declare the methodology selected by SBC in this matter as unreasonable and substitute another methodology, why even have that kind of a review if they don't, if you're saying they're not empowered to do that?
I mean, the review is looking at 6 inches of cost studies that get filed to see how they comply with the four-part test that SBC did. There's still a lot of factual determinations as to how the methodology is applied. And that was the Ohio Commission's role here. It doesn't have an independent basis to reject the outcome because the Federal Commission does that under the statute. Let me go back to the payphone's tariff filing, because in the September 2004 opinion and order of the Commission made the finding that SBC had approved tariffs back in 1997, and that finding is subject to a deferential standard before this court of not against the manifest weight of the evidence, and that clearly is the case in here.
Counsel, this question of these letters regarding an agreement to do certain refunds, you said it's not in the record. The countervailing argument is made. It is in the record that's before us. It just was rejected by the commission. Do you disagree that the issue of whether or not the commission properly blew right past that and refused to look at them is preserved and before us?
I think the only thing that was potentially preserved is Payphone Association's ability to argue that the two letters that were proffered at hearing and not admitted were errors as a matter of evidence. But they didn't make that argument before the court. They made substantive arguments based upon the letters not of record, and under precedent, they have waived that argument. So to conclude, SBC would say that the rates that we set forth on page 14 of our April brief are the rates that this court should order go into effect on a prospective basis, because we understand that under KECO and its progeny that rates cannot be retroactive. So SBC is going to have to live with the unlawfully low rates that the commission has ordered into effect in 2004. The new rates that we believe are lawful would go into effect on a prospective basis, just as Payphone Association can't look back to 1997 at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.